Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. I'm Jerry. I have Max here. Max, hello.
Hi, Jerry.
You can tell there's a tone we're affecting right now.
It's like bad weather.
Yeah. I mean, we have it here in North Carolina right now. It's a very gray day. You know?
Yeah, same in Manchester. It's always like that in Manchester, though.
I was gonna say I've heard these things. Like maybe you have a few more gray days than we do here in North Carolina. But our tone really isn't that much affected by the weather, though. It's more of the non-game we saw on Saturday.
Mm.
Yeah, it was not
Just the opposite of competitive.
Yeah. I would even say not competitive. Because that's the opposite. You see?
Mm.
I was an English major.
Just call something.
What was that?
Just caught up with me words. I'm thinking, what is the opposite of it?
That was just me being a dumbass.
the English major hits the nail on the head.
Oh, yeah, by saying not. that's being a dumbass, sorry. So we do have a lot to cover today. So for the pod people, please allow me to summarize what this show will look like. We're going to start by giving a quick listen to Edward's instant match reaction. He was not a happy camper, just like us. Except he was there and recording himself. So we got some pretty quick thoughts on that. And we'll talk about his reaction. Then we'll delve into our own reactions of the City, non-win, non-tie, loss that the scoreline flattered us, frankly. So we'll go into that. Then we'll talk about the Mice meetings that have been going on with supporters. Dan Mice has been meeting to try to talk about their vision for the new stadium and try to get some thoughts, some feedback from supporters, which is great. The fact that our club does this. That is, yeah. And I'm excited, frankly, by seeing some of the images and hearing some of the feedback. People are getting psyched, and it's great. It's awesome. And lastly, we're going to finish by talking about there's rumors that maybe Everton is making a signing already, which is very not Everton-esque. It's to be making a signing in early April.
The opposite of Everton.
Yes.
not Everton.
See, we're coining all these revolutionary terms. hopefully people are catching the sarcasm here. So we'll go into that and do a little talk about him, which we have mentioned him before. Let's listen to Edward's instant match reaction now.
Instant match reaction. We're crap. We are very, 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 very bad, and I don't understand. You know, we go for these games against the top six, and we go defensive. As soon as Schneiderlin is brought in, like, actually, he played okay. That's the weird thing. Schneiderlin played okay at times. In fact, the whole team played okay at times, but they were very far and few between. And, like, how? When we go against the top six, we always go defensive, all right? Which is kind of obvious. But then, why not go for it, like, put pressure on them, at least? You know, in the City game early in the season, we got a goal because we pressured them and actually went for it. But in this one, we just did nothing. Like, every player steps far back and does nothing when they get the ball. But it's always, always against the top six. Like, we'll crumble. Like, we're at home, so we should be going for it, but we don't. Like, every player just, like, is about 2 feet away from a Man City player. And with that quality that City had today, don't, you know, fair play to them. They actually were brilliant. They've just played us out of the park, you know, defensively, attacking. They were brilliant. But Like, you give them that amount of time on the ball, they're gonna kill us. They're gonna create something, and they're gonna kill us. So, I don't know. Like, we've got Liverpool next week, and we are gonna get torn apart. We are gonna get torn apart if we play like that. If we do not go for it, we are gonna get torn apart.
So, having heard that, Max, you in agreement with that guy?
I am. I think that the point that he made that is what most Evertonians are saying is just the game plan and how we approach the game was just pathetic, really. To the way he said there was an Everton man about 2 foot away from the City player with an underbody, and that was the main concern that I had. You know, when you're playing against Manchester City with the pace, the power, their ability to switch the ball and bomb forward, you need a midfield and you need a defence that's mobile enough to keep up with that and to press them and to not allow them to have the breaks that they did. And I think me and Jerry were talking earlier, and we highlighted it straight away, the midfield, Morgan Schneiderlin and Wayne Rooney in midfield. It's just it hasn't got the legs to keep up with the likes of Kevin De Bruyne, Fernandinho, who absolutely ran the show. Fernandinho, looking back at his stats from that game, you know, he had near enough to, I think he had 14% of the ball. Everton as a whole only had 18% of the ball. I think, honest to God, it was just gross mismanagement by Allardyce, really. I've tried to be objective as I can and tried to look at this as Sam Allardyce versus Pep Guardiola, and that's pretty much what it was. You know, he couldn't lace Guardiola's boots. It was just a timid approach. You know, after every kickoff, it was a long ball to the same place and it invariably ended up doing the same thing.
Yeah.
It was so disappointing.
So, our City match reaction, we've seen Edwards' instant match reaction, and he's not so happy. So, Max, what are you thinking about that? It reminded me of watching, it was almost like watching Barcelona versus West Brom. You know what I mean? One team sitting back, trying to park the bus, just chill, and the other team just connecting passes and the defending team not even attempting to take the ball. That's what really frustrated me. And the thing is, if Rooney or Schneiderlin had pressed, they're so slow that City would have just gone around them and played around them, and it would have left big openings in the middle.
We saw that for the second goal, if I'm not mistaken. Phil Jagielka rushed out, and I think it was Leroy Sané who, you know, knocked the ball over his head, quite literally, and ended up setting Jesus up, I think. But City were playing such a high line, that was something that I noticed straight away, and I think that's something that Guardiola deploys, really, to have most of the football played in the opposition half, and we didn't try and counter that in any way. We stuck with this long ball approach, and really, when I say this is Pep Guardiola versus Sam Allardyce, it literally was that. It was this clash of philosophies, and we saw how flexible and fluid one can be and how damaging the other can be, and the fact that, you know, it doesn't combat against these different systems, and I think it just goes to show that he's just way out of his depth at Everton.
Yeah. I was angry the second that the team came out. As soon as I saw it, I said, this is too slow. This is too slow. There's no way you should be playing Schneiderlin and Rooney as kind of a center-mid pairing together without a very quick defensive presence. You know? Only way, and frankly, I mean, I sound like I'm just completely harping on him. He didn't have the worst game I've seen him play this season, but Schneiderlin, I think, was the person who should not have been starting.
I know, but I agree. I've got a piece coming out on Morgan Schneiderlin soon. I wrote about it, and as soon at the end of that, after that match, I was already writing the piece, but that match kind of just put the cherry on the top of the cake for me. There was so much for me to go off from it. I mean, I think Fernandinho took something around 187 touches. I think Schneiderlin only got around 32.
Yeah.
And I think you, particularly in this day and age in the Premier League, I think whoever you've got holding midfield can sum up how you play. I feel, and you know, the casual. It's amazing to watch Fernandinho. I think he's been by a mile the best holding midfield in the league so far. You know, his casual nature. You see it with, I mean, they're not doing as well, but N'Golo Kanté and his energy at Chelsea. But you know, and you look at Everton and you just think, Morgan Schneiderlin, he doesn't do himself any favours. He just coasts through these games when you really think, for the sake of his reputation and, you know, for the sake of the World Cup in the summer, you know, he move himself about and he try and repair his reputation, because we all know that's not in the greatest of places at the minute. But, yeah, I think that was the final nail in the coffin with Schneiderlin for me, as far as I'm concerned, because they had his back for a very long time. But particularly, you know, he used to play for Manchester United, as did Wayne Rooney, coming up against your old rivals. You'd expect, you know, a bit of fire in the belly and a bit of aggression, and we just didn't show any signs of that at all.
Yeah, and to be fair, Rooney didn't have his best game either. He actually had one of the worst games that I've seen him play this season. Because City were pressing and forcing us to play a lot of defense, Rooney wasn't on the ball much. Hence, he's having to play a lot of defense. And he cannot stay with any of City's attacking players in terms of speed. He just can't. He needed somebody to cover his ass. And that was supposed to be Schneiderlin, who plays with zero intensity and zero aggression. So that's the thing. A lot of people say he didn't play that. Schneiderlin didn't play that bad. But did you really see him sprinting and trying to win that ball back with reckless abandon?
Exactly, and that's what you need exactly against Manchester City. You need that intensity and aggression in your play. And you know, I feel like any other club in the country coming up against the champions elect, you should be fired up and ready for the game that it is. But if we just kind of again, this expected loss, I think, is all that Sam chalks it down as. But my point about this is, as Evertonians, we expect to see our team go into games and compete. Doesn't matter who it's against. We expect to see us compete. If we get beat, we get beat, you know. But Everton are one of those teams that are expected to compete no matter where they go. And just looking at the possession stats, I know a lot of people say possession doesn't mean everything, but the possession stats spoke more about the game than what the scoreline did, as you said earlier.
Yeah. Can we both agree where the match got less disgusting? The tiny turning point where it seemed like we actually started giving it a little bit of a go. I don't know how long it lasted, really. I mean, can we both agree that where that was? Do you know where I'm thinking?
The Balassi goal.
Just before it, we take out Rooney, and we bring in Davies. All right? Davies, I will give credit to Davies. He was actually trying to win the ball back. You know? I actually thought the game was more tolerable for a short period of time. When we actually did press their goal a little bit, didn't last long, but
and a while ago, I wrote a piece on Davies after the Watford game when we got beat by Watford, and again I remember writing and you know, because something that I thoroughly believe, that whenever Davies is on the pitch, and if it's a game where we've been beat or we haven't played well, he always tends to be the one shining light of a performance, because it's that effort and that energy that he brings to the pitch. And again, I know that there was a lot of people saying before the game that the game was possibly not suited to him due to the amount of time that he loses the ball and how he can be caught out. But I think we'll both agree that coming up against Manchester City, you need that type of energy that he's got. And again, you'll probably agree again that he should have been in the place of Schneiderlin and would have provided more as well. It was just completely and utterly disappointing with how we performed in that game. You know, as Edward said in his match reaction, we just sat off and let them play the game. and you can't do that against Manchester City. They're one of the best teams that I've ever seen.
We let them play. It was like, I mean, honestly, here we call it keep away. I think y'all call it keep ball. We were basically just, you know, just it was very frustrating to watch, and it's an awful game to watch as a neutral, I would think. No, I can't even say that because I thought City played some good football for their goals. Yeah, so as a neutral, you get to watch one team.
As I was sitting there at the game, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, okay, Everton are getting absolutely battered here, but try and observe this as a neutral. Try and observe this Manchester City team in full flow and you know, for periods of the game. I think that's all you could do is sit and admire what they were doing.
Yeah.
They certainly made us look silly. I mean, our wingers were playing as fullbacks at times. You know, it was like we had about six at the back.
Yeah. Personally, I would have started. I actually would have had Davies in for DCL, and I would have had Boningame in for Schneiderlin. Because I think he provides the speed in the back. Davies usually gives us more of a spark when, like we talked, we said this like 100 times this season, when he's not forced to be the main defensive presence.
Yeah.
When you've got a more defensive-minded player back there and he can kind of go forward. And he was allowed to do that on Saturday. I don't know. That's the way I would have approached it. I think we would have had a little more of a chance. But honestly, but I don't know if the mentality of the whole team was ready, was where it needed to be.
No, because after a lot of defeats this season, we've took them to heart and we've thought, oh God, that's quite possibly one of the worst defeats we've ever seen us suffer. But you know, I said you'd be wrong to overreact to a defeat by this Manchester City team. What I do take issue with though is the way we set up, the way the manager has set them up and what the manager's told them to do. It was it's very clear that the manager said, you know, when we kick off, play the long ball.
Mm-hmm.
Get as many men up as you can and play the long ball. It was clear that the manager would have told them, you know, stand off. Because, they're managerial instructions. You know, they're what you're told to do by your manager, you know. And it was as a team, we were standing off. It wasn't as if, you know...
It's almost as though they were told, keep them in front of you. Keep them in front of you. Just make sure they're not, you know, getting past you. Which is hilarious that Schneiderlin, for the first goal, didn't track and allowed, was it David Silva, to get that cross? Like, literally, I think David Silva did a 1-2, ran behind Schneiderlin, who just kind of didn't track with him at all. And it's just tough to watch that kind of shit, man. You know? And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I felt like Baines, although, I mean, I'm like one of Leighton Baines' biggest fans. I love him. I think he's awesome. I mean, that was my first kit, you know?
Yeah.
But I think he was exposed a little bit in terms of speed.
Yeah, that's why I saw Yannick Bolasie, you know, covering him so much, because Bolasie was the only one really that could, you know, catch up to the likes of Sane and Sterling. Something like, I know we didn't mention it, but for that first goal, how has the man that's playing on the left side managed to find himself space on the right shoulder? And you know, it was a lovely finish by Leroy Sane of the volley, but again, it goes down to the positional awareness of the players. Who's tracking them? Who's shouting? You know, there's your man. And hope, you know, we've it's derby week, and we all know how much derby weeks and derby games can take out of us. So we can't let this. We can't mull over this for too long, because a derby win could restore a bit of pride into in the season, but. Again, it's been such a forgetful and underwhelming season.
Yeah. I can't just help but just nod my head. So we did get some reactions. Our the Toffee Blues Facebook account asked for some reactions to the match, and here's a few of them. John Paul Tully said, "First time in a long time we haven't took it to City." It's true, because we didn't take it to them. They literally took it to us the entire time. Paulette Martin said, "This type of kick in law enforcement is considered deadly force." I'm assuming she's talking about City using deadly force on us. Danny Crocker said, "Outplayed in our own home. City played with pure class. Nothing more to it. Big changes needed from us." Yeah. Alan Doolin said, "Game was over after 12 minutes. Pretty much. Dean Holmes said, "Hey, we got beat by arguably the best team in the world." And Carol Pearl said, "Us the boys, them the professionals." So,
yeah.
I mean, there's... I understand all those reactions. Now to Twitter, which the prompt was a little bit different. Three-word reaction. Owen Parks and Ian Simcox both said the same thing. Roll on May. I agree with all of these, right, by the way.
Yeah.
Ironies, I guess that's how... Said Championship League quality. I understand that. Alexandra Greenway said, and this is one of my favorites, a complete omni-shambles. I've never heard that term before, and she may have just coined it. I don't know. I think it's great.
Well, yeah, we'll add that to the dictionary of our new phrases.
Omni-shambles and not competitive. There you go, folks. Descendant of Ruanad, I'm not pronouncing that right, said, "Destined to fail," because we were. The way we set up, it was destined to fail. That's totally true. Steve L. said, "Davies must start." I'm with you on that. Nicola McCown, I guess. Nicola McCown said, "Chased shit." I'm sorry, I'm going to say shitty instead of city like five times today. Chased City's shadows, which, again, that's true. Paul Tran said, "Where to start?" Yeah, because, yeah, I don't know where to start on this. Boy Wonder Baxter said, "Played musical statues." Luke, and I don't get this. Maybe you get this, but I think the fact that it doesn't make sense is why I love it. Luke says, "Sesame seed buns."
Probably more entertaining than watching Everton.
Maybe. I just thought, I like the idea of somebody saying sesame seed buns and having it not apply at all. I love it. And Stee, Saint, I don't know, Stee Baird, let's say that. Stee Baird says, and you're going to have to tell me what this means. I just think it's funny. Utter piss flaps. I don't know what that means. It just sounds disgusting.
We weren't very good.
Yeah, see, that's the way I interpreted it, but I wasn't sure if it had some disgusting meaning that I didn't know about, because it sounds dirty and gross.
Yeah.
And
yeah, one of them.
Seedy. So, all right. So that's a lot of stuff I think we have to agree on, although our word uses may not be the same. I think we'll all think of... whenever we think of our loss against City next year, we'll think sesame seed buns. So, you got anything else on this, man? I think I'm tapped out on this.
Three word, roll on May.
Roll on May. Yeah. Yes. So that is all for our City match reaction. We need to talk. Let's have conversation about Mice, right? Dan Mice has been meeting with supporters for feedback, essentially, talking to supporters about what they want in the new stadium. And since these meetings have started, some early images of the interior of the stadium, the way they're planning it, have begun to seep out. Things discussing their plans as well and their inspirations. one of the biggest ones that people have been talking about is the fact that they want a main stand meant to be inspired by Dortmund's yellow wall. Yeah, looks huge. Looks huge and awesome. Just going to say that. no idea about capacity yet. They haven't really divulged that information. Yeah. And they haven't really discussed the exterior either much.
Yeah, he said he was cautious of 60K, wasn't he? That was something that kind of came out of the meetings as well, which... And he said, you know, that the last few seats in the stadium would be the most expensive and bring in the least revenue. But I take slight issue with that. In if our ambitions are to be a Champions League club, and if they are to reach those heights, then if you know, in the course of that, wouldn't it just save us the expansion? If we have the 60K and the expensive seats, surely if we do reach the level that we're aspiring for, then they should fill themselves out. So that's something that I'm slightly cautious of. Obviously, again, and I think a lot of people don't realise it's still very much in the developmental stages at the moment. But I'm sure it'll be talked about thousands and thousands of times until a final number's actually hashed out.
Yeah, we Max and I were talking off camera because every once in a while we do that, you know. Mm. Max doesn't like to admit it, but we totally do that sometimes. we're saying that it's like a puzzle they have to put together because they have to fit it into the land that they have purchased. All right. So size wise, it has to fit in there. Additionally, the exterior is going to have to match, you know, the historical significance of the surrounding area. And you can't really do a whole lot of destruction of the historical pieces that are around the area. So there's that. You got to think about capacity. You got to try to figure out how to please everybody in terms of capacity, but do what you also feel like is right in terms of economics, but also in terms of aesthetics and all that stuff. You want to make sure atmosphere is amazing, and the big stand is going to contribute to that. And additionally, they've decided to throw in a safe standing section, at least temporarily. That's what the plans. There is one planned, it seems. Really quick about safe standing. I don't think we have that here in the States, like anywhere. Can we talk about?
I was just going to say, aren't the Outlaws?
Well, they stand the whole time, but it's not designed to stand.
Not, not a designed area for standing.
Yeah, it's basically it's like, hey, we've made a decision. We're going to stand here.
Yeah.
There are still seats there. You know what I mean? Mm. So it's not like bars where.
Ah, right. I understand. I never knew that. I just thought of that here because, you know, like you say, you listed it straight away there. The atmosphere, that's the one thing that the safe standing generates. And it was kind of what my mind jumped to with the Outlaws. And as you say, the yellow wall was the first thing that came to my mind when I saw that big kind of almost vertical stand. And, you know, that full of Evertonians would be a sight to behold.
Is the reason that some people are against safe standing is that because it's difficult to make it as safe as you would want because it is people standing and there are bars, so... You know what I mean? Like I'm trying to interpret this because we don't have these questions here.
Yeah, I think obviously after the Hillsborough disaster and things like that, I don't think there's any complete black and white answer to it. I just think it's seen as a pathway straight to, you know, a disaster or something bad happening. And again, that's why that it's not going to be the full stand going to be safe standing. So again, I think it's a matter of trialing. But something that came into my mind when I seen where the safe standing area was positioned, it's, you know, directly behind the goal. That makes me curious to think: will there be nets that are set up, you know, similar to ones that I've been to Wolfsburg Stadium, and they've got them at Wolfsburg. I think they've got them at the Camp Nou as well. It's, you know, all these kind of variables factor into, again, this decision-making process or the puzzle, as you say. And, you know, we've talked about Dan Mice, and he's the right man for the job, isn't he? He
knows,
yeah, and he loves what he's doing. And of course, I think a big thing for me is that he feels like it's a career-defining project. So obviously, he's going to make sure that this is something that he and all of us can be proud of.
Yeah, if he's not believing everything he says, then he's doing a really good job acting. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He has thoroughly immersed himself in just Everton. It's like he's like bathing in Everton. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sorry for the image.
Yeah, he's embraced the culture, hasn't he? And hopefully it's something that's replicated through the stadium.
Yeah. People at the meetings all came away, the ones that I've seen on Twitter anyway, they all came away very optimistic, especially since some people were grumbling, like, what's the hold up with this stadium? Why aren't we seeing images? I bet this isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
That was something that was a bit strange for me, the way the, as you say, the images kind of seeped out through the fans that were at the meetings. I'd have really thought that they'd have been planned by the club to release, you know, showing at the AGM earlier in the year, or, you know, as some sort of release rather than relying on them to be seeped out.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. I mean, Everton are spot on with the way they do the fan consultations anyway. I think the way Everton include the fans and appreciate fan opinions for things like this, because I was involved in the badge consultation when we tried to change the badge, and they've done a really good job of that. And I think to actually have the man over himself, Dan Mice, to actually talk to the fans, I can't see any downsides to it.
Yeah, I took the survey for the badge, and I got to be honest, felt important.
Mm.
It's not often I feel important, but that was kind of great. It was, you know what I mean? At least you felt like you felt like your opinion made a difference.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of cool. I think, and I didn't realize, I've been wondering why these images weren't coming out. And I think it may be because they don't want early plans leaking out that are things that they haven't developed as much as they want. I think they want to wait until they implement the fan and supporter input, the feedback. Mm. They want to implement that, and they want to have a better idea before they start showing, hey, these are our thoughts. Instead of having to let plans out, then the supporters come out and possibly get angry about it, and then they have their feedback, and then they release new plans. Mm. If you sit there and have bunches of new plans leaking out all the time, you officially release them, then it becomes just like you've put out so many damn images, who can keep track?
Yeah.
So I'm starting to understand the thought process behind it a little.
Yeah.
I mean, not a little. I understand it.
Yeah.
The comparisons that everybody are making about this, you know, with the new designs, as far as the interior goes, people are comparing it to Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, where the Indianapolis Colts play, which is one of my favorite NFL stadiums in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're thinking also is the fact that the outside is not, the exterior of that stadium is not like overly modern. It's just, it looks sort of, I don't know, it looks classic.
It looks like a fortress. And
yeah.
Again, that's what's one of the principles that they've tried to push, isn't it?
But the interesting thing about it, though, if you look at it from certain angles, it doesn't look like, hey, this is an American football stadium at all. And it doesn't look like a bowl, you know?
Yeah, that's something that caught my eye as well, the corner of the ground meet, it wasn't a ball, and I think
it's not. And he knows we don't want that.
Yeah, that's what I think a lot of fans were over the moon with that, because you know the ball it brings the West Ham connotations, and a lot of grounds that kind of have that bowl shape. I've always felt like the they always feel more like arenas to me, rather than, you know, football stadiums. And again, it promotes more atmosphere, I think.
Well, it does, and it's, I mean, a lot of it is the acoustics, right? That's a big part of it. It's one of the reasons why, you know, I'm so glad that we're studying Dortmund's, you know, stadium, yeah. and how they've, yeah, such a good idea, because that's one of the most fun games when you watch them on TV, at least. I'm assuming in person it's even better, but yeah, the atmosphere there is awesome. So it feels, I don't know, I think what we're going to get, I love the idea of a historic looking exterior and the designs inside. I'm totally, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a naive American who doesn't know a whole lot about stadium design, football stadium design. You know, I see a lot of American football designs, you know, here, but I haven't really studied the, you know, European football, or actually the, you know, normal football stadium design in terms of atmosphere. I think this looks awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of I've took several. As you know, the university that I go to, you know, it's a football university. I've attended several lectures where, you know, it's discussed about stadia and, you know, how to get the most out of what you state, and the factors and the thought process that goes into it. You know, you need to. So one of the things that blew my mind was how you need to look at where the sun would hit the grass, and just all things like that, you know, something that you wouldn't think of off the top of your head. But, you know, I think it just goes to show that the task that's on our hands, and fingers crossed it all goes right.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I'm curious about roof.
Yeah.
And how that's going to work out. That's why, you know, we don't really know those specifics yet. We'll just have to see. I mean, it's going to be... you know, literally on the riverside. So there's, the wind is going to be a factor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we need something to kind of cut that a bit.
Yeah.
Because I noticed on the designs, there was one that was north-south oriented and one that was more east-west oriented, because I guess they haven't decided which, with pros and cons of each, as though they haven't figured that out yet, which I think is, it's good that they're letting supporters have a conversation about that. So capacity is something we've discussed before. The Toffee Blues Twitter account did a survey about capacity of the new stadium, and what people would want. Results are interesting. 10% said they wanted 45,000 to 50,000. 31% said 50,000 to 55,000. Let me just say that part. 31% said 50,000 to 55,000. 46% said 55,000 to 60,000. And 13% said 60 plus. I was expecting a higher percentage for 60 plus, because a lot of people were saying, you know, just over 61,000. You know, that's what a lot of people were, you know.
Yeah.
What was it? 61... was it 61,878?
Yeah, 1870. That was like the cryptic little message thrown up by Dan Mice. But as I said earlier, I really do feel like if we want to stay true to our long-term ambitions of reaching the heights of Champions League and consistently competing for Europe, then the 60,000 should sell themselves. And so I wouldn't go as far to say 60 plus. Myself, I'd be in the 55 to 60 bracket, the upper echelons of that anyway.
Before I had a whole lot of conversations, I was thinking 60 plus, you know, a little over 60, just because I felt like we need to be competing with the bigger clubs. The ones that have those bigger stadiums, we need to be doing that. But if we've got 55 to 60 and our atmosphere is tight, if our atmosphere is just insane to play in, I'm good. You know what I mean? I'm so good with that.
Yeah, because, you know, you see the examples at, you know, at Manchester City, the prime example at the minute, their stadium, they don't sell that out every week.
Yeah.
And they're by far the best the team's ever been. And, you know, again, you've just got to think practically about these sorts of things.
Yeah. So, anything else to add about this? About these, we've had some news. We've had some twitching on the stadium. Yeah. It's great. It's still alive.
We have. Yeah, I just feel like in the continuity of news, I think needs to be keep it coming. Just keep us informed, because I feel like, you know, I think the timing of these fan consultations have been really Everton to me, to use that phrase. I feel like, you know, once we have a defeat like we do against Manchester City, you know,
they
plan perfectly between Manchester City and the derby. So,
yeah,
you know, we might get beat by City, we might get beat by Liverpool, but the stadium's going to be fresh on everyone's mind. So
here's some positivity. It's positivity. So true. We're trained to be cynical and jaded. That's the way it is. Cool. Very cool. So this is, on that down note, I'm still going to be happy about it. I'm good, you know? So yeah, I guess that's it for our stadium news segment. Let's hope the communications team at Everton keeps pushing out information. That'd be great, because you see it on Twitter all the time. People, it's one of their big complaints, is we need information in a more steady and sometimes professional manner. So that's it for that. We have potentially some good news. It's a little startling and strange. There is seemingly real Everton transfer news in early April. Has this been said before? I don't know. I know we've heard some rumors that Everton are close to signing Wilshire, but these are rumors. Who knows? But this is an actual rumor from a journalist in Argentina, I think. I'm not really sure about that, actually. But anyway, Emiliano Radi on Twitter has said Frank Fabra will be next Everton player. And this is translated from Spanish, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, his representative traveled to England and advanced in the offer. Boca claims for the Colombian player the offer would exceed 5 million euros. Okay? That's paraphrased a little bit. But essentially, the term, and I looked at the translation myself because I speak some decent Spanish. It does say he will be next Everton player. That is exactly what it means. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, I've read on another publication where they were saying that his agent had come out and said that he had had no contact from Everton on a different day, like earlier in the week. And the reason that the agent was there was because they already happened to be there because of international play.
Mm.
Because Frank Fabra is a Colombian international, and he's a left back. All right? Should have said that at the beginning. But he's a left back that plays for Boca Juniors in Argentina. He's 27. He's quick. He's pretty strong. He's very good going forward. The only complaints that I've seen is that I've seen some people say he's not a great defender. I've seen other people say he's a good defender, but he makes the odd mistake. Immediately my mind jumps to Funes Mori. But I'm thinking that his mistakes aren't quite as obvious. But you know, who knows? We haven't seen Funes Mori play in forever, so who knows? You know, but yeah, we're talking about a player that seems like he's very different to Leighton Baines. It seems like he's the opposite of Leighton Baines. You know, someone who's very quick. We have no idea how his service is. That's the opposite of Leighton Baines. He may not be quite as good at defending. Leighton Baines is a great defender. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to kind of plug him in and swap him and Leighton Baines next season, you know, for different looks.
It's the left-back discussion that should have happened in January, really. I said this off-camera. I hate talking about transfer speculation when we're not in the middle of a transfer window. And, you know, given the instability at Everton at the minute, you know, the manager, the position of manager and the position of director of football do not seem like stable jobs at the minute. So I don't think they're in any position to be exactly calling shots on long-term plans.
Yeah.
Again, I haven't seen much of Fabra myself. So, and Argentinian league, again, it's this gamble that we're unsure of. And around €5 million or, you know, whatever the valuation is, it just makes you think, you know, where's the spending power? Because left back is this position that I feel like, because we've seen straight away, as soon as Baines and Coleman have come back into the team, we saw how integral they are to our play, and we depend on them a lot going forward. And it is a risk associated with this. And again, as you say, 27 years old, it's supposedly a player in his prime. So
he'd need to play immediately.
Exactly.
I'd get angry if he wasn't playing immediately. But for that price, less of a risk. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Again, it's kind of like the Sandro thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I think about the fact that our left back situation, Baines, Garbutt, Anthony Robinson, who will be back next season. If one of them had to kind of deputize every once in a while for Baines, that's not too bad. You know, let's pretend like we signed Frank Fabra, and he doesn't perform. That's a risk, and that happens, and that's what happened with Sandro. He went out on loan, and we're probably going to sell him for more than we bought him. All right. The problem is we needed to rely on someone like Sandro, and he was not able to perform at a time when we needed him.
Yeah.
That's the issue that I see. Is possibly having to rely on youth. But to be honest with you, these are players that I think we see as future Everton players, as far as Robinson especially. You know, I believe the club views him as someone who could come in and play.
Yeah, you know, we've seen what happens when you throw someone in the deep water at left back, so to speak, with Cuco Martina. And that was, of course, you know, the lad did improve over his time playing in that position, but it was just all a bit of a calamity, wasn't it? I'm not taking that for granted. At least if we do bring this lad in, it's his natural position. And is he a left footer, by the way? Because I know you know more about him than I do.
The only positions he has played is left back and left mid, okay? And so I'm assuming that left is his dominant foot, but I believe I've seen footage of him scoring some goals with his right as well. I think this season he has 2 goals and 3 assists. I like seeing the assists there, but that is in 17 games.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know his stats for Colombia because this news just came out a little while before we recorded. So I have some research, but not all of it. You hit on something I wanted to talk about, okay? Making signings at a time where we're probably going to have some transition, all right? the big rumors are Wilshere and Fabra. Which was a good player. We talked about him. Injury risk, but some experience. Adds something we don't really have in the middle. Cool. But you've heard Sam say he really admires him. So would that be a Sam signing?
Yeah, but I think so. But at the same time, I feel like Wilshere is one of those players that is good to have in your Arsenal because he's a, ironically, but he's a very.
Why did that take me a second? That's ridiculous.
He's very versatile. I think Jack Wilshere, you know, you can play him deep or you can play him further forward in the midfield. So again, and it depends on who we do bring in, how he wants to use his fullbacks. Because I know one of the things I'm very excited about with Fonseca, if Fonseca is the 1-2 coming, is that he, similar to, you know, throwing it back to the Moyes era, towards the end of the Moyes era, Martinez, that at the start of the Martinez era, you know, how dominant were we when we used our fullbacks and as an attacking outlet? And I know that's something that Fonseca really does focus on. So, and if this lad is good at going forward, then that should all, you know, that should suit him perfectly. But again, as I say, it's just not the right time to be calling shots or making assumptions when everything's so insecure.
See, I'm torn by this too. I agree with you. However, I love the fact that we see a need and we're addressing it as soon as we can. We're not saving it. Because think about it. World Cup summer, all right? Buying players in the latter half of the transfer window is not going to be always the easiest thing. Especially if they're on World Cup squads.
Yeah.
So, I think, and this is what I'm hoping, that we already know who's coming in, all right? And he's being consulted on some of these signings.
Hopefully, I mean.
That's what I'm hoping for. And to be honest with you, Walsh, I think Walsh was one of the main voices behind the Cenk Tosun signing. And I think that was a great signing.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a risk. I think a lot of people would have said that's a risk.
Yeah, those are the type of signings that we expect from Walsh, though. You know, these hidden gems, is the phrase we always use. There's always, I think we, you know, we were a little, not disappointed, but, you know, we were underwhelmed with Walcott and, you know, some of the names that he brought in, Mangala. They were all kind of casts off from top six clubs. But
it's awful, but I totally forgot Mangala played for us at the beginning of this year. I totally forgot. That's terrible. You know, I mean, he had a bad knee injury. I feel like a dick. My fault, Ilya Quim. My bad.
Yeah. Very unfortunate, but
yeah, shitty.
Again, if this is a hidden gem that he's managed to find at Boca Juniors, then I'm sure even if he is to leave his position and the lad does come in, we'll be thanking him for that, because if it turns out to be someone that, as you say, we manage right, we don't. Because I think if we bring him in, he'll be expected to hit the ground running whenever called upon, because we'll be in the process of really phasing Baines out, which is a sad thought because of, you know, the dependability of Leighton Baines at left back has been phenomenal, you know, over the years. But after January, it really is a position that we need to look at, because we've seen what happens when we aren't prepared for someone to step in.
Yeah, I think with Baines, it's going to start to go a lot like Jagielka, you know, where he'll have games where he should be the unquestioned starter. And you say, why would you play anyone else? You know, what were we thinking? To doubt that. And then he'll have a game where he looks slower. There's a quicker player there, and they're making him look like he's running in molasses, you know? And it's just going to happen like that. Rooney, same thing. These are players that we can get good minutes out of, though. These are players that can still do a lot for us, but I don't think they're every game starters anymore moving forward, you know? I think it's a lot to ask a player in his, you know, over 30 to play every game. All right?
I agree.
You know, and just to be a deep enough team, you know? So why don't we start off by playing Baines in the league, and then play Fabra, you know, during cup games, and then if Baines needs a rest, you bring Fabra in, you know what I mean? Something like that. And that's if he's up to snuff. You know, if he's able, because if he's not, if he doesn't look anywhere close to Premier League quality, then you have new conversations.
Yeah.
You know, do you give the kids a look? Or do you bring somebody else in and loan him out? And I don't know. I have no idea. But I know he can get a work permit because he plays for the national team.
Right.
Yes. So that's the thing. Sure. We don't have another Onyekuru situation.
No, I was just going to say, so it's not Onyekuru. It's viable.
Yeah. I was actually really excited. I would prefer Joe Bryan, personally. I think he was my ideal left back candidate because he was the guy who's going to come in and be your left back for, you know, 10 years. That'd be great.
Yeah.
But that would. I have a feeling they were asking way more than we wanted. Yeah. Which is a bummer because we're supposed to be rich.
Yeah. Supposedly. But again, as I said before, if they're asking it, pay it because it's a chance to build a back four that we can.
Yeah.
Really start looking at, you know, forming this team, because even now we're still not 100% sure on what our best starting 11 is, really.
Quick update on the Frank Fabra situation. In this particular episode, we've been kind of crediting Walsh, which may be the case. However, something has come out that apparently PSV were also interested in signing Frank Fabra earlier in the year, like in February. And the director of football for PSV is Marcel Brands. So that may be a pure coincidence, or it could be we have a new incoming director of football who is already beginning to pull strings. So, apologies for the handheld video, and apologies for the sound quality. Yeah. All right. Back to the show. Do you think Everton's thinking, their mindset is bring in Fabra, keep Anthony Robinson over here, and when Baines phases out, Fabra into starter, bring in Anthony Robinson to kind of deputize there?
That's very, very possible. And I know a lot of people will listen to that and say, well, Anthony Robinson just might end up being another one of those lads who goes out on loan and ends up going.
Totally might be.
But if you do watch Anthony Robinson, he really doesn't seem like his career is going to take that path. He really looks like he's learning and developing. So what the purposes of a loan are, to learn and to develop as a player, he really looked like he took those steps, as you've seen, by him getting a call up to the US national squad. And, you know, fingers crossed, the lad does make that progression into the first team. And as you say, if that's the approach we're going to take with it, then I don't think many of us will have a problem with that, because, you know, we've got belief in Anthony Robinson there.
Yeah. I think with those young players, those championship loans are great for physical conditioning. If you look at usually the first time a kid goes on loan to the championship, they have bad injury problems. You know, it's always nagging stuff. They're out part of the season. They come back, you know, and then they're out again. There's a lot of in and out stuff. And it's because they can't handle the physical nature. And it's not just the actual, you know, banging around. It's the fact that you play so many games.
Yeah.
It is really hard on your body. But when you come out of there, you're carved out of wood. Yeah, that's a line from Fight Club. Just saying. But yeah, you are. You know, I look at Kieran Dowell. I was worried he was going to have injury problems this season. And I think he's a tougher, stronger player now.
Mm.
Yeah, now, I worry that his level has descended a bit in terms of the quality of football he's playing. But he's lasting. He's literally going the distance, and that's big. You know, and Anthony Robinson is doing the same thing. He's playing the season, the whole season. That means he's going to be way more able to play the amount of games in the Premier League when it's time.
Yeah.
If it ever comes time. So, yeah. But this is a Fabra video. we're just examining the whole left-back situation.
Yeah, the left-back situation is a whole thing of itself, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I feel better about right back, though, because I feel I still think John Joe Kinney is serviceable, you know.
Yeah,
I did not think he did. I thought he did a better job at right back than Martino when Martino was playing right back. So, and I just don't know how Martino's going to come back next season, even though it seems like he's a super hardworking guy and coaches love him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good professional, maybe not the talent level that we need. And I said maybe. It's probably not the right word. Just trying to be nice. So, whether or not this is a Sam or Walsh signing, that remains to be seen, as we may be having a new manager and a new director of football coming in. However, if we have a new director of football, it's possible that Walsh will stay on as a scout position, which is what he's used to. Because it does seem like he's been a little, out of his depth when it comes to the director of football position. Bring someone who's done it before. Let Walsh do what he normally does,
Makes sense.
So if that's the case, then this signing still works if Walsh is still going to be around. So unless they're talking to our new top secret manager.
Commenting on his Instagram photos.
Paolo. it's going to be crazy when it's totally not him. there's all this Fonseca love, and then all of a sudden we're like, oh, damn.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Howe. We didn't see that coming. So I really wouldn't see that coming, even though people are suggesting it. So I think we covered this thoroughly, like way more thoroughly than expected.
Yeah.
So that is it for our Frank Fabra segment. Maybe we sign him. I think we'll always welcome more left back depth, especially for just over 5 million euros.
Yeah.
So, that is also it for the big show. Podcasters out there, thank you for listening. Please subscribe to the Toffee Blues podcast. Rate it if you can. And just be nice. Leave us a kind review. Something like, their voices sound nice. No one would ever say that about mine. But anyway, maybe Max's. Maybe you like Max's voice. Just saying. please subscribe to the Toffee Blues YouTube channel. Give a like, give a comment, all that stuff. We're nearing 700 subscribers, shooting for 1,000. Tell some fellow Blues about it. We'd appreciate it. Check out the Toffee Blues on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. The Toffee Blues website has all kinds of Everton analysis, including stuff by Max. All right, there's also some stuff on there by David, who appears on this show but is not on till he gets Wi-Fi in his new place, his new beautiful place. So, I think that's it. No more plugging. Hey, time to edit. My whole life, editing. I guess that's all. Max, thanks so much. For myself, Jerry, and for Max, thanks a lot, and bye.
Bye.